Hi, welcome to lesson 5 of Creative Coding with Unity. So we're going to see how to instantiate these prefabs that we've created through code. Right now our project has a prefab, so if you've been following along, we're going to stop this. If you have any prefabs on your scene, like I do right now with the spin cube, let's make sure we delete it. We're going to be creating some code and instantiating these prefabs directly. Before we get started in the code, I created an illustration to show what we're going to be doing. This explains the sequence of what we're going to do. So in our scene, we're going to create an empty game object, and we're going to create this code, and we'll just name it SketchCS. You have to remember that inside of Unity, code that you write, for example, this sketch code, it can't exist without being attached to something. So we need to create this empty game object so that we can attach our code to it. That way, when this game object gets rendered, when our scene gets rendered, its start and its update calls get fired. This is how you would do something equivalent like in processing. You usually just create a sketch file from scratch. In Open Frameworks, you'd have an OF app, right? In all of these creative coding languages, you tend to have this idea of your initial sketch. In Unity, we can do the same thing, but we have to attach it to an empty game object or to some other element that's already on the scene. You'll see some tutorials put this kind of game manager, this state manager. They might put it on a camera, they might put it on another object. I like keeping things clean, so I will always create an empty game object. We'll name it sketch holder, and we'll attach the sketch code that we're going to create next. Inside of that sketch code, on start, we're going to learn this instantiate function, which is how you talk to the spin cube free prefab that exists in our assets folder. Let's look a little bit at what's going on. We can instantiate the entire prefab here, but let's not forget our spin cube prefab is made up of that original box geometry, that game object 3D cube that we created, and we bundled it with the cube script code that we wrote. So in Sketch, we are going to instantiate an entire prefab. When we want to talk to that prefab script, we have to call getComponent on that prefab and basically say, I want to talk to your script specifically. So spin cube prefab, get component this script. And that way we'll have access to the script that's bundled inside of our prefab. If you recall from our last lesson, there are two public fields that we had on CubeScript. We had a public field called rotate speed that would allow anybody externally to set the rotate speed on the spin cube. And we also had a public function called set size that would allow anybody externally talking to this cube script to be able to set the size of that cube inside of it. So this is the logic of what we'll be doing. Make sure you understand it, pause it if you need to. But now it's going to go ahead and implement this inside of Unity. So first thing we're going to do is create the sketch object, add an empty game cube, and attach it to our scene. Then we'll start working the code to instantiate. Let's get that started. Let me go back to Unity. I have no prefabs on here. I'm going to right-click inside of Assets and create a new code, C# script. We'll call it Sketch. We see that Unity automatically creates a start and update function on the sketch. Remember, this is just in assets right now. If I run it, nothing gets called on here unless the sketch is associated to an object. So let's do that now. Inside of my hierarchy, I'm going to come up and I'm going to say game object, create empty. This creates an empty game object. It has nothing in it other than this transform that every game object needs to have. Doesn't matter because there's no visual footprint on it, but I just like zeroing it out. I'm going to rename this game object. We don't have to, but just for visual hierarchy, I'll name this sketch holder. And that's for you to understand the difference that this is just the game object. It's not actually the sketch code. With sketch holder selected, I'm going to drag my sketch code and drop it onto here. I could do it a couple ways. I dragged it onto here. I could drag it from here. But basically, this game object sketch holder now has a copy of the sketch code we're going to write. And when I run it, Unity will go through all of these objects, and if they have code, we'll call their start and update. And this is exactly how we create kind of a standalone piece of logic that controls the entire experience. This is our sketch. So now that we have our sketch code and we've attached it to an empty game object, so we know that it will run, let's double click and start editing our sketch code. So Unity in our sketch, as we've seen before, gives us a start and update function. But now, how do we tell Unity that I want to have access to this asset called SpinCube? We looked at public fields with, let's go back to our illustration. We saw that when we created SpinCube and we made these fields public, we saw that we could tweak these in the editor directly. We can set values to them in the editor. We're going to do the exact same thing inside of Sketch to have it be able to look up a specific prefab. So let me come to my code, and I'm going to create a public field here, and we'll call this SpinCube prefab. Excuse me, it's going to be a game object, and let's call it my prefab, just so that you know the name can be anything it wants. Here's our main sketch code. We've made this public. We can drop any game object we want, and we're naming it internally my prefab. So in our start command, we can say var new cube is equal to, and here's the command, instantiate. Instantiate says, what do you want me to instantiate? I need an object. And we're going to say, instantiate whatever I have attached to the my prefab public property. It's going to say, where do you want to instantiate it? And so we give it a position. In this case, we'll give it new vector. We can put it in the origin if we want. And it's also going to look for a rotation. Since we're handling most of the rotation animations ourselves, when we instantiate it, so Unity's basically saying, what do you want me to instantiate? Where do you want me to instantiate it? And what original orientation do you want me to have with it? We're basically going to tell Unity just the default orientation, nothing special. And you call that a quaternion identity. Quaternions are a slightly advanced topic in terms of how to handle rotations in 3D space. But we just need to remember this command, quaternion identity. Whenever Unity's asking for what rotation do you want me to have, just say the identity quaternion, which basically says the default, the normal rotation. So with this one line of code, assuming we attach something to our public field here, we should be able to instantiate it in code at this location. Let's see if this works. I'm going to save it. I'm going to return to Unity. Now when I select Sketch Holder, this particular copy of the sketch code attached to Sketch Holder has this public field called my prefab. That's what we just created. Now I can drop anything I want onto here. We want to drop our spin cube as the prefab we want. I could click this and it pops up my assets folder, and I could pick it from here if I wanted to, or I could just have dragged from my assets folder and dropped it onto here. And by doing this, we're telling this instance of Sketch, which is going to run because it's attached to our scene, this instance of Sketch, your prefab is SpinCube. So when it runs its code, we have attached SpinCube onto this public variable. So inside our start command, we're going to say instantiate whatever we attach to our public variable. This one line of code is how you instantiate this one line of code, and setting it to a public variable is probably the easiest way to instantiate prefabs. Let's make sure it works. We have no spin cubes on our scene, but when we run it, we see that this prefab we have now instantiated through code. So that's pretty good. Let's move it up a little bit to get to the middle of our room. Our room was 10 by 10. So instead of putting it straight at 000, let's just put it at 050. Going to run it. It should not be in the middle of our room. There we go. Let's make it a little bit bigger. But in order to do that, I need to talk to my SpinCube's code. Let's go back to the illustration to see what we have to do. We can instantiate a SpinCube, but to talk to its public fields, I have to tell my object to get component its script, and then I can call these things. There's one other issue here, which we'll see in code. Right now, I'm kind of cheating. I'm using a variable. I'm saying I'm not sure what type of object you're going to get back. It's a variable. Instantiate will return an object, not necessarily a Unity game object. And it's Unity game objects that understand the command get component. Objects by themselves don't understand that, which means if I come over here and I say new cube and I try and say get component, it's not there. Because new cube is only an object, not necessarily a game object. Now, I know my spin cube is a prefab, which is a game object. So what I'm going to do in C sharp, I'm going to cast this explicitly as a game object. In this various programming language, you're casting it. I'm saying you're returning an object, but I know that you are a game object. So I'm going to be treating you like a game object. And now if I type new cube dot get, I see these lists of functions that game objects specifically have, and the top one being get component. So again, what we have to call, what we have to pass to get component is what type of component do we have. Our spin cube has the cube script inside of it, so that's the component we need to get. So let's come back to code. I'm telling my new cube to get components brace, and if I start typing cube script, that's exactly where it is. I do the parentheses, and now I'm talking to it directly. I'm telling my new cube, get component your cube script. These parentheses basically make it real, and I can now talk to it directly. Do we find here our public fields? Let's find out. Do we have set size? There it is. So let's make it a little bit bigger now, let's make it 3.0. Now I'm throwing a lot of concepts at you for an introductory lesson. As our lessons get more advanced, I'll be explaining each step less and less. But for right now, if you're brand new to this, make sure you understand it, because we're going to be building so many other things on top of this concept. We're instantiating a game object. We're able to reach into this prefab and talk to its code directly. And anything that's been made public in that in our cube script, we can now access it like this. Let's see if this works. Saving it, going back to Unity, let's run. No cubes. Now we have a big cube that we've instantiated in code, and we're starting to adjust its public properties and public fields. Good. That's a pretty big cube, a 3x3 scale cube inside of a 10 scale room. So let's bring that down a little bit. So I'll just make it 1.5. And we see that it's spinning around, but it's not necessarily rotating. That's because it's sitting right on the y-axis. If we want to see it actually rotate around, we would start it off a little bit more to the side. So let's just say when we're positioning it, let's do this right here. If I run this, save and run, now it should start up over here. And since it's off-center, it's both spinning around itself and rotating around this y-axis. Good. At this point, we're instantiating prefabs and working with its public fields. The next question comes in, how do we do this in a for loop? Well, that's pretty easy. Let's start adding a couple of these. First, let's start adding some let's clean house here. I'm putting all these properties in here. Let's pull that out. So I'm going to do float x is equal to, what were we saying, 3? So I'll say 3.0, float y was equal to, we were putting 5 here, so let's pull that out. And float z is equal to that for right now. So that here inside of our vector, instead of hard coding it, we can just say whatever we've defined previously as x, y, z. And we can wrap all of this up inside of a for loop. For in I equals 0, let's say we want to add 3 of them for right now. So while I is less than 3, and copy this code, paste it inside of my for loop. If I do this, I will be creating 3 cubes right on top of themselves. But let's actually see what happens. If they weren't rotating at all, you wouldn't see them. They would all just be sharing the same space and time. But don't forget we have some random in there. So they're going to be spinning in a random way, and they'll also be rotating at a random speed. So they should start off all in the same space and then start breaking apart. I believe that's what should happen. Let's check it out. We run it. It should all pop up. There they are. So they're spinning around themselves and around the center at a slightly different shape. There's another public field that we had, which was called rotate speed, I believe. So if I want to, besides setting size, if I want to tweak their rotate speed, I can do new code, new cube, get component. I'm still talking to its cube script. Now I believe it was rotation speed. Yep, rotation speed. Let's do that first, just to see. Let's give each of them a random rotation speed. Now they should probably break apart. Let's run it. They all pop up. They should all be rotating. Yeah, and we can see that they start separating out because this one picked a random rotation speed that was a little bit slower than the middle one, and this one picked a random speed that was the fastest. Let's start looking at some positioning algorithms now. In order to do that, we're going to zero out their rotation speed. I'm going to do this so that they stop rotating around the room. This way we can position them in the room where we want them, and while the end effect will be rotating around. Right now we're just going to be looking at positioning. So let's make sure they stay still once we place them where we want them. So if I run this, okay, they're all staying still, which is exactly what we want. Let's see, how can we position this better? Because they're all using the same XYZ. The obvious way of adding personality to each of these and to start separating them around is every time this for loop is called, and it's going to be called three times, they're all using the same XYZ position. We do want them all around the same Y and possibly even the same Z, so let's just start spreading them across visually along the X. If I just did something like this, where the first cube is going to be at 0, the next cube will be positioned at 1, and the second cube will be positioned at 2, we'll create a straight line of them. They'll be overlapping over here because if the first cube is at 0 and the next cube is at 1, but each cube is 1.5 wide, there'll be an overlap. So let's actually make them a little bit smaller than 1.5. Let's just make them 0.5. Let's run this. There we go. We have three cubes and they're positioned in the middle of the room. I'm going to come to scene so I can rotate around, and you can see that it's happening exactly what we want to have happen. Okay, so we're learning to position them. That's good. But as we've seen, if we change their sizes, they can start overlapping. So this is a little bit fixed. If I added, let's say, six of them, and I run, we're starting to see that the sixth one is already out of bounds, right? So what we kind of need to do is figure out how much room do we have, and then based on how many cubes we want, how do we turn that into a percentage? So let's figure that out. I'm going to first pull out this 6 into a variable up here I'll call total cubes. And let's say, put that here. So our loop is going to go based on how many total cubes we define up here. This way we don't keep changing numbers. We see we start off in this very clay way, but then we start locking it up into Legos like prefab so that we can then snap together. But it starts off with a much more exploratory way of looking at code and numbers. So 6 felt good for right now. Let's pull it out. If we're starting at 0, the distance till the next wall will be 5. So for right now, let's just test it with this. Now, inside of every loop, if I want to create the percentage, I'm going to say whatever my I value is divided by total cubes. The problem with this is that my total cubes is an integer, and my I is an integer. And whenever you divide an integer by an integer, you're not going to get a fraction. You'll always get 0 in this case. So if we really want a floating point, we need to cast at least one of these into a floating point so we can get a fraction. So this is going to give me the percentage. And here on my x, I'm going to say whatever my percentage is, I'm going to say percentage of the total distance remaining. Let's test it and see. There we go. I run and I have 6 cubes starting at 0 and going through my total distance by placing them based on their percentage. Now, because we know that because we know the cube's 10 wide, we're positioning it this way. If I wanted to add more cubes, let's say I want to add 12 cubes, and I run this, they'll be positioned well, but it's going to force them to start overlapping because they're bigger than what every step should be. So here we see these cubes, and they're positioned this way. What I'd like to have is I'd like to have a big cube in the middle, and I'd like to distribute the cubes and make them be smaller as we move out to the edges. So let's start playing with this a little bit more. Let's see, how can we do this? So we want to make them smaller. Somehow or another, this percentage, we want it to also be how big they are. Let's think what we want to do. If we just put it in here as percentage this way, because this is going to give us a number from 0 to 1. Let's see what happens if we put percentage there. And I run this. The exact opposite of what I want. The first cube's really tiny, and as it gets farther out, they get bigger. I want the exact opposite of this. When this person's really tiny, I actually want it to be really big. And when my percentage is really big, I actually want it to be really small. So there's an easy way of doing that. Instead of using percentage, I'm going to start at 1 and subtract my percentage. So percentage would give me a number growing from 0 to 1, or to very close to 1. By subtracting that from 1, I get the inverse of it. So if I run this now, there we go. That's going pretty good. They're stepping down in this scale. There's a lot of clutter here. Let me spread it out a little bit more, at least for this lesson. Let me drop my total cubes back to 8, see if that helps out the spread. Good, so it's getting there. I wish I could find a way of distributing this out, and we actually can. This is what the next lesson is going to look at. We're going to look at a couple more algorithms that take this from a linear step to a more graceful or curved step. That'll be our next lesson. But right now, let's just finish out some basic positioning algorithms. So this is getting close to what we want. Okay. If I let them be in the same way, just like the rotation speed will also be that, so that the farther away they are, the smaller they get. Oops. But the faster they get. Let's see how that looks. There we go. So the farther out they were, the smaller they got, but the rotation speed's also faster. So we're getting there. We're getting pretty close to what we want. There are a couple positional tweaks we will keep doing in the following lessons, but so far we've looked at creating these prefabs through code, instantiating them, talking to their internal script components that they have. In this case, it was called CubeScript, and then tweaking those public properties we had originally coded in CubeScript, which is inside of that prefab, in our bigger sketch code. We'll also notice here that we see these prefabs, even though we instantiated them in code, in our hierarchy, as long as we're in game mode, we see that they always get added up in our hierarchy. But as soon as we stop, they've all disappeared from our hierarchy because they exist and get instantiated only during runtime because that's what our code is telling Unity to do during runtime. Good. So stay tuned for the next lesson.